I'm here at Croxteth Hall, which is Lord Sefton's stately pile in Liverpool. Although I'm in an incredible building here, it's a reconstructed Viking longhouse, and I'm sitting with Vaira Hrolfsdrath.
Yes.
Is that your real name?
That's my real name.
Is it?
Yes, Elvira is on my birth certificate and Rolf's wife is on my marriage certificate.
We're going to do the recreate a Viking meal.
Yes.
In this longhouse.
Yes.
With two ladies from the WI.
I hope they're up for an adventure. That's our cooker. The open fire in the middle of the room is our cooker.
It's a kind of wood-framed raised hearth.
Yes.
And you've got a number of cast iron pots around it.
They wouldn't have been cast. Not cast iron.
What are they, beaten?
They're beaten iron. They're wrought iron work by a blacksmith.
Now, the thing that confuses me here, here we are on the west side of the UK.
Yes.
And the Vikings came from the east. They raided all along the east coast. They weren't over
the
here, were
they? The Danish came from the east. The Norwegians came down from the west.
So would they have done raids from here?
They would have done. There was Irish slaves were brought into this area, but a lot more trading. But the men are away for 6 months a year, trading, raiding, whatever. You know, they come home, they're feasted, they're looked after, they're pampered and everything else, and then they're kicked out again the next season to go back out and get some more pretties for us.
So the women were powerful.
Very
people
powerful.
In society. So have you got a menu in mind for them?
Yes, I would say something like a nice loin of pork or and a meat stew, because you'd have two meats to flash your wealth.
I think given that most historical reenactors are, how can I put this politely, out of the ordinary sort of people, these Vikings seem stranger than most. The men are all hairy. Breastplates, shields, chainmail, gives them a huge presence. And the women have a tendency towards being somewhat larger than life as well. It's an impression that is enhanced by, I have to say, their voluminous dresses. The headman is Rolf, who's currently fighting with some Saxons just across the way over there. He is married to Vara, hence her name, Rolf's wife, which makes life very simple, doesn't it?
People have come to the Vikings with a certain number of preconceptions. Horned helmets and an awful lot of an awful lot of fighting and raiding.
Yay!
But they were traders, weren't they?
I tend to describe it as trading with a capital R.
And the helmet thing?
Basically, if you are wearing a helmet in a battle, you would strap it on. All an axeman has to do is hook one end of the axe over one of the horns, and not only is the helmet going to come off, but so is the head of the wearer.
Where did the horned helmet idea come from then?
A number of what appear to be ceremonial hats have been found in Bronze Age deposits, which is pre-Roman, with large protuberances. But where it actually came from for our period is that when the Bayreuth Opera Company were staging Wagner's Ring Cycle for the first time in the middle of the 19th century, their costume designer trawled every archaeology and history book he could find and just cobbled things together that looked good. And horned helmets, he thought, looked fantastic.
So the horned helmets came from the nutters of the opera world.
That's one way of putting it.
Strangely enough, I can imagine Vara in a horned helmet on a stage. I've now crossed the estuary to the other side of the Mersey, Willesden, which can, I promise you, out-gentrify anything the home counties has to offer. And I've arranged to meet two leading lights, stalwarts, if you like, of the local Women's Institute, Sheila Arden and June Egan, who both know a fair bit about food and cookery. Both are grandmothers and have cooked an awful lot of meals in their lives. Sheila, why did you say yes?
I was quite keen to give it a whirl, and then afterwards, when I'd said yes, I thought, ooh, what have I taken on?
Have you dealt with Viking subjects before? At school, were you?
I seem to remember years ago we did a Viking meal. When they were doing it in their history lesson, they did it in their English, and it was brought in all the subjects.
And you were doing domestic science, home economics.
Yes,
yeah.
And then in our department we cooked, but I truly can't remember what
we did. Can you not remember what it was?
No, I mean, you're going back now to the the 50s.
June, what's your background in food?
When I married, I couldn't boil an egg. But as time went on, I got interested in food and started going to cookery classes and then moved on to cordon bleu cooking. And then when I moved to Willesden, I joined the WI Market and cooked for the WI Market for several years. I've never cooked anything on an open fire.
Not even a barbecue?
No.
No?
No, don't own a barbecue.
Sheila? Well, how long have you been in the WI?
Only about 16, 17 years. There is Super Lot in our WI. It's the one that's the oldest in the village. And we meet in the afternoons, so we do tend to get older ladies. But they are so nice. They're lovely old things. They really, really... Well, I'm an old thing now as well with them. And they praise you up for whenever you do things. And I'm programme secretary, and they always say, what a lovely speaker you got and how we enjoyed it. They're just very, very nice, and they boost one's ego.
This is the thing about doing this programme, is that everybody says, oh, you'll be able to give us a talk about it. Yeah. No doubt we shall be inveigled into it.
Now, it's almost impossible to make a radio programme about Vikings without coming to York. And I've come to the Jorvik Centre, which is right in the middle of the town. The trouble with Vikings is that, by and large, there's very little written record about the sort of food they ate or how they cooked it. So I've come to meet a chap called Dr. Andrew Jones, the world's expert on Viking poo. We have to start at the bottom and work our way up.
Andrew Jones, nice to meet you, sir.
What street are we in?
We're in Parliament Street, which is the main central plaza really in the city, and we've done excavations in here and there's been building works, and we know there are very substantial organic deposits that spread up from the River Foss to this area, so we know that we're pretty much in the centre of Viking Age York.
Do you mind your billing as the poo doctor?
No, I'm quite happy with whatever people call me, but I do love and study excrement. I find it a really interesting and fascinating aspect of how to get into the past, as it were.
Now, presumably you can tell from excrement what people have eaten, some of the things that people have eaten.
That's precisely it, yeah.
But
yeah.
You can't tell them about the recipes, can you?
No.
You can't work that far back up.
No. But what you can do is you can begin to put together the raw ingredients for meals. And just like modern cooks today, they get ingredients and they create new things. When we try any historical cooking, it's bound to have a very heavy interpretation layer on it. What we do know is that food was much more seasonal. Eggs, you see, for example, which we consider to be a staple all the year round, would only have been available for a few months of the year. That some sorts of fishes only come in late summer, early autumn, sort of species wouldn't be around at other times of the year. There would have been a great emphasis on fish like herring, which can be pickled, caught in very large numbers and pickled, and there's a long tradition of that in Scandinavia, and that possibly came over to the UK, though there's evidence from southern England that the herring industry was going before the Viking Age hit York.
Fantastic traders. So would we have had kind of quite exotic dried fruits and things like that?
Possibly.
Can you find grape pips?
No, we've not found grape pips from Viking Age levels. There doesn't seem to be much in the way of figs and grapes, which is what you find very commonly in Roman deposits.
What do we have to guess about what they would have eaten that you can't tell us from their remains?
How sweet things were. They had honey. We know they had honey as a sweetener, but how much they were able to use, how expensive it was, we don't really know how salty. There are plenty of wild herbs that can give a peppery taste, like watercress, for example. We don't know much about that. People are very adept at finding plants with bitter principles in it that to enhance food flavour. Leafy vegetables as well. Leeks are one leafy vegetable we know that people did have, and they are referenced in some of the sagas as well.
Onions?
Yes, possibly some oniony type things, but it's very hard to be absolutely certain. Cabbages, there are some sort of wild brassica plants that you find growing on the coast, and there's some evidence from York that we've got bits of brassica leaf, and they may have had something, nothing like a cabbage that we would understand, but more perhaps like a sort of, I don't know, greens or pollards or something like that.
Did they have ovens? Do you know anything about the cooking techniques?
Yes, we do know a little bit about the cooking techniques. We know that they had big frying pans, and there are simple ovens that are created simply by making a basket work of wicker and coating it with clay, and that's an ancient technology that goes on all the way through into the medieval period. You can easily do cooking on just a hearthstone, where you light a fire and put a hearthstone over a griddle cooking on the top of that, and you can even have a hearth and then get the ashes, clear the ashes away, put bread in the middle of the on where the hearth was, put a pot over that and heat the ashes around that, and that will work. So there's lots of ways of cooking. Exactly how any one meal was prepared, that's where you get stuck. What did it actually taste like? What sort of table manners did people have? Those sorts of things we can't tell. What we do know about table manners actually is that they swallowed fish bones and chewed them up whole, because there's a particular pattern of damage you get on small and medium-sized fishes like herring and mackerel, where the bones get distorted and crunched, and that only happens with chewing. We've done experiments with...
So they didn't bother with much filleting then, you didn't think?
Not of those animals, no, they didn't. They would have just swallowed them and chewed them up and passed the bones. So
hard
there are some
people.
Hard people. Well, I guess some bits of their lives were hard. I mean, they were used to much more environmental extremes. They were used to being cold, but they had good clothes against the cold, and they were very strong. If you try sailing a Viking ship, which I've been fortunate to do in Denmark, the manpower necessary to pull the ropes by hand, because they had no pulleys, and hold them securely, they are tough people. Men would have been men. And because physical prowess and mental intelligence went together, going into unknown territories, making a profit, using your intelligence, coming back and telling great stories.
I'm in the car on the way back from York, heading for the Wirral, and Dr. Jones, marvellous man, has agreed to come to our meal in a couple of weeks' time when we get round to cooking it, and he's going to pass judgment on its authenticity for us. And in an effort to get it right, I'm going to enlist the help of another striking Viking woman. She's an American who runs her own website, where she bills herself as the Viking Answer Lady. So I've lined up Sheila and June, our WI women, and Vara to meet me in a studio on the Wirral, where we'll be having a four-way conversation down the line to America. It is amazing though, isn't it? Why does the world need a Viking Answer Lady? How many questions are there to ask about Vikings? Where do these people come from?
All over the world. I receive something around 500 questions in an average month. About half would be from school children, and the other half would be from a wide range of people.
Have you any suggestions about what we could do? Vara's picked a couple of things off your website. What are you suggesting there, Vara?
Venison stew, based on the one they found at Jorvik. A loin of pork or something similar, done with a stuffing of apricots and vine fruits, boiled in cider. Good pottage from your own recipe. Honey glazed vegetables from your recipe. And we thought pears done in wine and spices as a dessert or a start of dessert.
Those all sound very reasonable to the period.
What advice would you give to novice cooks as Sheila and I on the Viking method of cooking?
Well, Scandinavia was, as it is today, a fairly cold place, so a lot of the cooking is going to be heavier in fats than some of our more health-conscious modern recipes would normally indicate. If you keep to a palette of spices also that reflect those that we know that they had, you're going to end up with something much closer to the kind of flavors that you would expect from the period as well.
Have you got any suggestions about dishes that we could try that aren't on our list?
There are probably a lot of stews being made, I think, for common consumption on an everyday basis, because stew tends to preserve more of the fat in the meal and therefore more flavor as well. Another one that's very good are nettle soup. It's a very good soup. It's very much like a spinach soup.
You haven't sold it to me yet.
Well, the nettles, they do sound frightening, but by the time you've finished cooking them, they no longer have any sting, and it's a very rich, very...
You're going to use that word nutritious in a minute now, aren't you?
It is extremely nutritious.
Would you like to have lived then?
Yes and no. I think that it's very hard for a modern person to understand how dark the world could be in terms of just light, the absence of light, and the absence of the things that we come to count on. We know the Scandinavians had much better hygiene than did their Anglo-Saxon counterparts, because we have some marvelous preserved sermons from the Anglo-Saxons excoriating these horrible Danish men because they bathed weekly and combed their hair and beards, and were therefore stealing the fair flower of English womanhood away.
Right. It's the morning of the day. We're in the car. June and Sheila, let's go and see the longhouse. Now then,
well, look at
they're Sefton. In front of us.
Right, yes. Oh, I see what you
the
mean.
Shed.
Yes.
A shed. It's not a shed, it's a Viking longhouse.
What are the holes in the walls?
I don't need to let the smoke out, actually.
Oh, gosh.
The roof looks a little suspect at one end.
It does look like something somebody might have put together out of pallet tin.
Yes,
actually, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, it does.
There's Vara here, approaching us in her yellow thing. Yeah. Let's go. She's wearing a delightful yellow smock today.
Oh, you are naughty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, we're just going to sort out the clothes that you're going to wear today. So what have you got in this bag, Vara?
I've got some underdresses and overdresses. I've got two linen underdresses here, which I think you'll find are very comfortable. I've got a green one and I've got a very fetching cream one.
So who's going to wear the green one?
I don't mind.
I would suggest, actually, the gentleman leave and you take as much as you feel comfortable.
Okay, right, I'm going to go outside the door. The WI women at the moment seem terribly embarrassed about it all. I have to say, I kind of feel embarrassed on their behalf as well. I think Vara is the most authoritarian helper we've had so far. She is a very forceful person. She is going to completely dominate affairs, which is, in a way, is what we wanted to do, but, man. Can we come in yet?
Yes.
Oh, I can come in. Oh, that's beautiful. Dropped waste and everything. There's a grindstone over there. Are we going to
and
use
a
that?
Grindstone, yes. We're taking about 6 hours a day to grind the corn for bread, so I thought the ladies might like to have a little go and see how long it takes them just to grind a small amount.
This is the first time this series we've come across grinding technology. What is this?
This is a quernstone.
Basically looks like two round lumps of concrete with a handle so that you can turn one against the other.
Not concrete, it's good Derbyshire grit. There's a hole through the top one right the way through to the bottom of the top stone. So you've got the grinding face.
How much does this thing weigh?
10 kilograms. Is it?
I must be much stronger than I thought. And we're putting in
wheat
into the middle. How much do you put it? Do you have to put it through several times?
About a handful. Yes, you would have to.
And is there a speed thing? Is it? I mean, because you could obviously turn that quite fast.
Not too fast. If you turn it too fast, it doesn't crush properly and it shoots out. So it's a steady rhythm rather than a little bit faster than that, but not trying to break the world's speed record.
Sheila, just have a go at this. See how much effort is involved in this.
Oh, blimey. Yes, I see what you mean. Yes.
Actually, operating this stone, I did it for a couple of minutes there, you can feel it's working your stomach muscles as well, can't you? You have to kind of shift backwards and forwards as you're going round and round.
I thought it was light, but it is.
If you can imagine that was going for 6 or 7 hours a day, I mean, that would be the sound of a house, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be rumbling away in the background all day, underscoring the sound of what they were doing. All the neighbours, they've got such a noisy grindstone, haven't they? So it's now 10 to 1. What have we got to do this afternoon?
Right, well, first of all, we've got to get the pork on.
So it's basically boiled pork, but stuffed with vine fruits.
And apricots.
And dried apricots.
And wheat, bulgur wheat.
The other things you want to do, you want to achieve over the next hour or so?
Get the salmon on and get the venison stew on.
Anything about this food surprises you yet?
I expected it to be very, very different. I thought their diet was much more limited. I'm amazed just how much of all the nutrients that there are included in the food. I thought it was interesting there was no mention of potatoes.
No, they didn't come into the country until the 1600s.
Oh, of course, stupid me, yes, of course.
Raleigh and all those other people, potatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
What we're going to do now?
Venison, salmon, mackerel.
Mackerel. Let's get to it then.
Somebody wants to start chopping some vegetables. There's a basket full of veggies there. I've got sage, parsley, sorrel, mint, and some thyme, all of which are known from the period. But of course the carrots are completely the wrong colour. Those carrots are orange. The carrots would have been more black.
The orange carrot is a modern
development. It's 1600s from Holland, yes. People thought it looked prettier.
How do you want them cut?
Just chopped up, ready for a stew.
Just for the ordinary cordon bleu stew that you would do then. What have you brought? Did you bring a few weapons of your own then?
I've just brought a potato peeler and a knife.
You brought your own peeler? And your
I
own knife.
I might not. I thought I might have to peel one with a knife. You see. You try this one. Yeah, it's
try
really
it.
Good. Yeah.
I won't like it.
Yeah, I bet you will.
No, I don't like this potato peeler. I'm afraid I prefer mine. No. How come you've managed to get me peeling, doing your job? You're standing there with your hands on your hips, watching me try out your potato peeler. Take your potato peeler back. Get on with it. With its red plastic handle, you cheat.
Potage then.
Potage, yes.
Tell me what it is.
It's one of the staples of the Viking Age diet. It's a mix of pearl barley, gung as a sort of a porridge, with vegetables and spices and herbs or whatever you've got in and around to go into it. And then you add plenty of butter to it, and it's a good rich meal. These are not slimming meals, you will note. If one of you ladies would care to mix a bag and a half of flour with water and some salt, which is there, to make the a really thick, paste. Heavy paste, you know, for the salmon.
You've made this fantastically heavy wheat glue, I think we'll call it, in this pot
it's
here.
It's flour, water and salt, that's all.
And you're going to
smear
spread
it
all
it,
over this salmon?
Yes.
Now,
right.
Just good and thick, all over everywhere.
Right. What am I putting it in when it's done?
Nothing, it goes straight on the fire in the paste.
Sheila, do you think you're icing a cake?
See, it's just for sliding off. Oh. There's going to be some blue words in a minute. I should have dried it, you know. I'm sure it would have done better.
Will that help?
I've got flour in here, June.
It's not the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
I couldn't agree more.
You haven't tasted it yet.
Now, do you want me to tip this into that fire?
Just where that gap is, right in front of you now.
There?
That's it. You're all looking petrified at this poor salmon as though you've never seen a fish before in your lives.
I've never seen one lying in a bed of coals covered in wheat glue before.
Well, it looks awful.
That aside, we're actually beginning to get quite an array of aromas coming off here now.
You notice the table's got embroidered linen on. It's mentioned in the sagas the women of really good households had linens that they put on the table for feasts.
But that must have been awful, dripping grease over good linen, mustn't it?
Well, one would hope one's guests would be a little more polite than to drip grease onto good linen.
That suggests actually really rather good table manners, doesn't it?
Yes,
not the sort
much.
Of idea of people sitting there in a rather debauched way, getting drunk and shoving their knives point down into the table.
If any gentleman shoved his knife point down through my embroidery, the knife would be returned to him point down, being part of his anatomy, so he remember not to do it again.
The salmon has now been transferred to the floor and it just looks like a partly burned log. 11 quid's worth of salmon.
I can't believe that anything in there would be edible. I really can't.
Can you not?
No. Oh, yes, just look at
that.
Look
at the skin. The case has dropped off and it's just taken the skin with it.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Gosh, I can't believe that.
Let's go and have a look at the salmon on the table. Now, try a bit.
Delicious. Not a taste of smoke.
No.
No, nothing.
Nothing.
Beautiful.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I can't
believe
that. I thought it would be dry.
Oh, that was easy to find out.
We're all gathered round the table. Welcome to this magnificent feast. How often do you think they would have had a meal of this complexity on the table in front of them? Any idea?
We do have some records from the sagas which describe some mega feasts where hundreds of people would get together. There's one I remember, it was something like 4 oxen killed and 20 salmon served, all at the same feast. So it would have been a, you know, even larger thing for maybe 100, maybe more people. You know, the contrast is that there were times when there wasn't enough food to go around and people were short.
Sheila, what have you tried so far?
The venison stew, which I had never had venison before, ever. And the potage.
Sorry, potage, you're starting to pronounce it my way now.
The flavour is very, very subtle, I suppose.
Is that a polite way of saying bland?
Is that a terrible thing to say?
Something had to be used the way we use potatoes, and a pottage was one of the main foods of the day.
And barley, was that easy to grow?
Barley, there's plenty of evidence of people growing barley, no problem.
I haven't tried the pork though. I must have tried that. Pork.
I haven't tried it. Have you tried any pork yet?
Not yet. No, I'm still on the mackerel.
I know it's getting through everything, isn't it?
Yeah. Apricots and vine fruit. Yeah. Would they have got as far as here?
We have some evidence of, I believe, peaches in Viking Age York, but I don't know of any record of grapes. I have a little bit of reservation. I'm going to be corrected now, I'm sure. On the currants, red currants and white currants, I wasn't aware of those as being...
Yeah, we've got some blueberries in there, but I couldn't get enough blueberries.
Okay. I'm happy with vacciniums. Those are all right, because those are vacciniums, blueberries.
And we've got the pears in wine.
Well, you can have pears in wine, but... Well, I'm going to really stick my neck out here. They're too big. They're much too big.
They are much too big.
The apples, and we've got them. We found them. Apple cores. They were about 2 to 3 centimetres in diameter.
Crab apple.
And pears, similarly, were only about that big.
People like this who spend their weekends recreating meals. Do they have something to teach about the way the technology was used?
Absolutely. Oh, completely. I've done this sort of thing too, but not as well, I have to say. Part of the archaeological method, because what archaeologists are aiming to do is to understand the past. And a well-recognised step in that is to assess the archaeological evidence and try and do it yourself.
I'd just like to say thanks for this meal. First of all, I'd like Sheila and June just to say... what they're going to take away from today?
I've enjoyed preparing the food in this different way, and I was quite amazed at the amount of herbs and things that are used, because there's a lot of herb flavour in all the food, isn't there?
Sheila, how do you feel about Vikings and their
lives now? Oh, I've rethought my thoughts completely, yes. I was quite wrong. I just thought they were sort of rapers and pillagers, you know.
And the traditional way of ending a feast like this would be?
Well, I think maybe some sagas, maybe some songs, something like that might be good.
I can do you a story in a poem.
What are you going to do for us?
It's the opening lines from the funeral poem of King Eric Bloodaxe of York.
While you're telling your saga, Vara has arrived with a huge cow's horn, presumably full of some alcohol, is it?
I've brought the meat horn.
Excellent. It's going to improve the quality of the poetry no end. Pardon me.
Vac thug in her in heria. Pathko priza, pecky extra, bjorker id leithra. Valkyrie vinbera sem vise kunni. Gofugra nokora, svamsmer glathiata. Vat frimmer vatva bragi. Sem futuzun bifis, eza mengi, il mikis. Rakao vetsi, eza mengi,